Hello, this is Miriam Wendland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, June 21, 2018. First look, Census Bureau estimates. Asian, not aging. Of the 3,142 counties counted in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, there are now 150 with 25,000 plus Asian residents. Checking in at number 150, Champaign County, which grew by 306 Asians in 1 year, giving it 25,212. At 22.2 million, Asians represent the fastest growing segment of the U.S. population. Asians make up 12% of Champaign County's population, accounting for another 14.9%, the 32,230 Black or African American residents, though that figure is less unique, putting Champaign at 278th nationally. For overall population, it's number 318, sandwiched between Lackawanna, Pennsylvania, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama counties. Champaign County's neighbors have aged well. Only Douglas has a median age, 38.7, that's within a decade of Champaign's number. The 40 and over crowd includes Piatt, 43.0, Ford, 42.7, and Vermilion, 40.0. While Champaign County's estimated gender gap is too close to call, 104,865 women, 104,534 men, 85 and over women, 2,381, dwarf the number of men, 1,310, in that age bracket here. One of a couple handfuls of Illinois counties to grow every year this decade, Champaign, population 209,399, should have 10th place on Illinois' most populous counties list all to itself for years to come, with 12,947 more residents than number 11, Sangamon. Headed in the opposite direction, Vermilion, population 77,909, still the 22nd largest of Illinois' 102 counties, despite its population dropping every year this decade. It now has 17,293 fewer people than it did at the time of the 1980 census. Over the same period, Champaign County is plus 41,007. Only 55 counties in America lost more residents from 2010 to 2017 than Vermilion's 3,716. Among them, last place, Wayne, Michigan County, home to Detroit, which 66,957 people have fled in 7 years. Come 2035, the number crunchers at the Census Bureau report, history will be made. For the first time, there will be more people over age 65, 78 million, than under 18, 76.4 million, living in the United States. Close to home, that's a long way from playing out in Champaign County, where the median age remains a smidge over 30, 28.6 for men, 31.5 for women. According to a fresh batch of population estimates due to be released today by the Bureau. Midtown Crossing wish list detailed. Property owner remains aims for brewery, distillery, eateries, and apartments. By this time next year, Midtown could have a new brewery, distillery, and restaurant. Those, along with 10 upscale apartments, are all part of bar owner Scott Cochran's plans for his Midtown Crossing project at Chester and Water Streets. Midtown's going to have growth, Cochran said. I've always loved Chester Street, that two-block area, and then the opportunity came up. In the past 2 years, he and his companies have bought three of the four properties at the intersection for a combined $1.57 million. The southeast corner, where the former Chester Street Bar was located, is expected to be the first of the three to open to the public, Cochran said. He wants to make that a brewery with a tap room and five apartments, and he's planning to open the brewery this year. I hope to have that up and running before the end of the year, Cochran said. The equipment's been ordered, a brewmaster has been hired. The tap room will have a speakeasy feel with a secret entrance, Cochran said. I haven't decided if it will be a lawyer's office or a private detective's, he said. It will pass fire codes and all. After buying the former bar in 2017, Cochran had hoped to open a bar restaurant there before the end of last year. But a fire in October set that back. It did quite extensive damage, and we're getting ready to have it dry ice blasted to get the smell out, Cochrane said. It needed a lot of work. Across Chester Street in the Avenue building on the northeast corner of the intersection, Cochrane wants to build five turn-of-the-century apartments on the second floor and make the first floor a restaurant bar. On Tuesday, the Champaign City Council approved $300,000 in redevelopment grants to reimburse Cochrane for his $1.67 million plan to renovate the building. I don't know the concept yet of the restaurant, said Cochrane, who also owns the Campus Town Bars, Red Lion, Firehouse, and Clybourne. While the Avenue building, which has been vacant for at least 30 years, needs new roofs, new floors, mold removal, and other repairs, Cochrane hopes to have it ready by next summer. The Avenue will start on pretty soon, he said. Across Water Street in the former Bush Brothers building, Cochrane wants to create a micro distillery with a restaurant on the first floor and event space on the second. Whether it will be a distillery or not, that's up in the air. I'm in contact with the state, he said, but that's the intention. The building has an old wood beam ceiling on the second floor, and Cochrane wants to put raw timber trusses on the first floor. The north end originally had arched windows. Those will come back on the first floor, Cochrane said. There's also a car elevator that Cochrane wants to use for the restaurant's entryway. Between the Bush Brothers and Avenue buildings, Cochrane is working with the city to convert that block of Water Street into an outdoor dining and gathering space. I want the plaza open for next spring, he said. The distillery building will be after the brewery's done, and we hope to have that operational by next summer. While Cochrane continues to think Campustown will be in the center of attention, he said Midtown was due for development. It's going to take some time, he said, but it's a natural transition. U of I requests dismissal of student suit. Other defendant files counterclaims seeking $50,000 in damages. The University of Illinois is asking a judge to dismiss a lawsuit that accuses it of violating students' right to free speech, free press, and due process. Another defendant, graduate student Tariq Khan, filed a counterclaim requesting damages from plaintiffs Andrew Minnick, Joel Valdez, and Blair Nelson, who write for the website Campus Reform and are, or were, members of the campus conservative group Turning Point USA at UIUC. The federal lawsuit filed in April accused the U of I of issuing restraining orders against student journalists because of their political views and preventing them from doing their job. After Tariq Khan allegedly grabbed Valdez's phone last year at a protest against President Donald Trump and threw it to the ground while Nelson was filming, Minnick wrote about the incident for Campus Reform. About a month later, on the day Khan appeared in court for misdemeanor criminal damage to property, the three plaintiffs were issued no-contact directives by Assistant Dean of Students Roni Dai. Khan later had the charge dismissed after successfully completing a second chance program. The no-contact orders effectively banned students from observing, reporting on, or videoing Khan or his activities on campus, according to the lawsuit filed by Chicago attorney Whitman Brisby. Nor could the students, in the exercise of proper journalistic ethics, even contact Khan for his reaction or comment prior to publishing stories about him to assure balanced reporting. But the U of I says the order was not content-based and did not restrict the plaintiffs from publishing. The targeted restriction in contacting Khan does not prevent plaintiffs from gathering information about him and his activities from other sources, and in no way interferes with their right to publish that information, Springfield attorney Charles R. Schmedecki wrote on behalf of the U of I, later saying that the dean's suggestions on how Minnick could improve the situation hardly constitutes a restriction. Dai had suggested Minnick not write about Khan anymore a day after Minnick had been asked to leave a building where Khan's wife was. She felt threatened and afraid when Minnick and Valdez and two other men showed up, according to Khan's counterclaim. In their lawsuit, Minnick said they were there for a 3D printing lab presentation. The university also argues that the plaintiff's free speech rights weren't violated. While publishing a news article is protected, comments about Khan's children, his age, and kicking and beating him do not rise to the level of matters of public concern that warrant protection from retaliation, Schmedecki wrote. At the Trump protests, Valdez called Khan, 39, a 50-year-old man, and said, "Don't you have kids to look after?" according to the student's lawsuit. Later, Minnick tagged Khan on a meme of Trump that said, "Get him out of here. Beat the expletive out of him. I'll pay the legal fees." And in February, Valdez liked a Facebook post from a friend that said he could beat his expletive for you, bro, and commented, "Do it ASAP." The student's lawyer argued that these posts were sarcastic and that the code of conduct is too vague. The university code of conduct and provisions under which they are being disciplined, in effect, allow the university to discipline you if anything you say makes a student uncomfortable, Brisky told the News Gazette. And he said the social media threats are protected speech. You got to have an imminent threat that has the likely to cause harm, Brisky said. In his counterclaim, Khan is seeking more than $50,000 in damages for intentional infliction of emotional distress and hate crimes. After the Trump protests, Khan alleges that his Facebook page and university email address were posted online at sites known to be supported by racist and hate group supporters. This led to more than a dozen threatening emails or messages, Khan alleges, including many that mock his race and beliefs. "You are so screwed, little man," an email to him allegedly said. "You be's a tough guy on the radio. Grow up, seek guidance from your Iman, and good luck with your career at McDonald's." Khan suffered severe emotional distress, including but not limited to fear, anxiety, sleeplessness, concern for his family's safety, and all manner of severe emotional distress, which is continuing and ongoing, according to the counterclaim filed Tuesday by his lawyers. Khan declined to comment Wednesday. According University spokesman Robin Kaler also declined to comment on the pending litigation, but said the university is committed to protecting the rights of expression and speech of all members of our community. We have a little sports news. Coach of the Year, Uni High's David Bergendine. Why he's Coach of the Year. Bergendine's Illini captured their first ever sectional championship while sending more than one entry to the state meet for the first time. Freshman Zach Donini qualified in singles, and the doubles pairings of senior Van Gunderson, junior Sam Lee, and junior Krishna Sabai, junior Arjun Tangela also found a home at the Class 1A state tournament. Season highlights. We had a chance to play some really top talent from the Chicago area this year, and it was great to have the University of Chicago Lab go down. Chicago Lab School go down. We hung with them. We played IMSA, Illinois Math and Science Academy, and we were able to take them on. It was fun to have those kind of competitions where people came down to see us. They're always impressed to play at the Atkins facility where Illinois plays. I think it's fun to get lab schools out together. A few of my favorites. Events I need tickets to see are the solo debut of James Vaughn at Carnegie Hall and the 2020 Olympics to see Emma Rajic swim and Ariel Summit run. If I wasn't a coach, I would repair, condition, remodel, renovate, or rebuild everything around my home. My favorite go-to motivational tactic is helping the players realize that self-motivation will take them to the top. My favorite subject to study in school was language and literature. My favorite athletes are Ido Roth and Alex Mester. A movie I have seen is A Confederacy of Dunces, if it is ever produced. My favorite TV show is This Old House. If I could have dinner with any three people from any time period, I would pick Fyodor Dostoevsky, Soren Kierkegaard, and Blaise Pascal. What I enjoy most about coaching, seeing the players learning from each other. So David Bergendine was the Uni High School's boys tennis coach. In a family full of standouts, Sabre's star is rising above the rest. Wade Bailon knows who the winner would be. The question is if the rising junior at St. Thomas More took to the tennis court with his father Ernie and older sister Maddie, which Bailon would collect the most victories. The credentials? Wade qualified last month for the IHSA Class 1A Boys State Tournament, while both Ernie and Maddie played the sport at the University of Illinois. And now, the answer. My sister would win the most, Wade said, without hesitation. I think I'd be able to beat my dad, but my sister would win in the end. I can still beat him up a little bit, Maddie admitted. I've got a little more experience, but pretty soon he's going to be competing with me. Wade had little trouble doing just that in 2018 against the best the East Central Illinois prep scene had to offer. The News Gazette All-Area Boys Tennis Player of the Year garnered a 1A sectional singles title while posting a 14-2 record at the Sabres' number one position and pairing with senior J.P. Ridge for a 6-1 mark at number one doubles. So yes, Wade would soon surpass Maddie for family tennis supremacy. But he wasn't given the chance to put forth a similar effort among his peers during the May State Showcase. In high school, academics always will trump athletics, so it was natural that Wade had to get some end-of-the-year schoolwork done before the state tournament last month. One problem? Some, in this case, he had to compete 8 exams in 2 days. It's definitely a tough situation where they have to do all their finals before they leave for state, first-year STM coach Jason Chiantano said. It just adds so much stress. I'm not sure how the other kids do it. Getting less sleep and focusing 100% on coursework meant Wade's health was ripe to take a tumble. Chiantano said a bug going around STM did nothing to help matters. And so instead of squaring off against Chatham Glenwood's senior Kevin Zhang in an opening round singles bout, Bayon was confined to his bed. It broke our hearts, Ernie said. I think his body was weak and tired and vulnerable. He wanted to go anyway, but you've got a 102-degree fever, and it's 90 degrees, and you're playing 3 or 4 matches a day. It wasn't right for him to go. Wade took this roadblock in stride, describing the situation as a little disappointing. He noted that if this was his senior campaign, he'd be far more upset about how things played out. Instead, he's already looking forward. I realized I wasn't able to compete, really. I could have easily hurt myself pretty badly, Wade said, but I have 2 more years to hopefully qualify again, so we'll see how it goes. Wade picking up a tennis racket may seem like the most obvious sport-related decision ever made, considering his family's history in the venture. But he's tried his hand at golf and soccer. He's also realized tennis is his true calling. I felt a little bit compelled to play just because my dad and sister were both really successful in it, Wade said. I really just grew up with the sport, and I just learned to love it. Ernie recalls Wade tagging along for Maddie's STM tennis matches and actually soaking in what he was seeing rather than running off to a nearby playground or becoming immersed in his phone. Usually those things don't pay off when you're 11 or 12, Ernie said. But now that he's older and stronger and lifting weights, he's able to swing hard and hit the ball hard, and all the underlying things, the basics, are there. Even now, Wade has no trouble recalling just what he gained by being in the stands as Maddie made her way to a trio of girls' state tournament berths over the course of 4 years. I just kind of learned how confident she was, Wade said. She played number one in high school, went to Illinois State for her first year, and I gained a lot of respect for her walking on to the U of I and playing top 6. Maddie said one specific ideal she, along with Ernie, tried to instill in Wade was the knowledge that putting in reps is a requirement to become an effective tennis player. It's a lot more work than some people realize, especially those who don't know the sport really well, Maddie said. Starting at a young age, he was able to see how much time I put into it. He's been able to realize that's what you've got to do. Chiantano was new to the area when he took over the Sabres earlier this year, so he wasn't immediately aware which of his new charges was at the head of the pack. The first thing the Fairfax, Virginia native noticed was that Wade is a smaller guy. When he actually lined up across the court from Wade, though, that didn't matter. He has so much power in his shot, Chiantano said. It's hard to see where it comes from. He's clearly been playing his whole life. Ernie also served as STM assistant coach, but Chiantano didn't slot Wade in the number one singles position for that reason. It became clear to Chiantano this slight but strong youngster was far and away his top athlete. Everyone loves him on the team. Shia Titano said, when I first met him, I said, my tennis team in high school, one of my teammates went pro. Maybe there's someone on this team that's going pro, and they all yelled his name. Wade isn't rushing to judgment on that, and Ernie said he and wife Elizabeth don't want to force Wade in any direction with his future. Even though he qualified for state as a sophomore, just like his sister, Wade is keeping things simple on the court. It really doesn't change my goals too much, he said. My goal is just to try the hardest to have fun with it. A combination of factors has played into Wade's success thus far in his tennis career. Family influence, good work ethic, good natural ability, but the one attribute those closest to him find easiest to point out is just how intelligent Wade is between the white lines. He's a thinker out there, and I think that's a strength, Ernie said. He realizes the weakness of his opponents. He can rip the ball and hit it hard, but he's willing to play to the weakness of other players. I watched him play at sectionals, and obviously I was extremely impressed with him, Maddie added. He kept his composure. It's not always about who can hit the ball harder, but about going out and outsmarting your opponent. Shia Titano watched Wade achieve that against numerous local talents, including guys to whom he didn't stack up as a freshman. Area players like Danville Sr., Ryan Vadabeneker, Urbana freshman Bill Layton, and Uni High freshman Zachary Donini, all 2018 News Gazette All-Area first-team selections, fell at Wade's hands this year. He's on a really fast growth trajectory, the coach said, and he's only a sophomore, so I can't wait to see how he plays the next couple of years. He's going to be unbeatable. Once again, though, that's not something Wade is pondering. He just wants to play some tennis. I never really thought about that, Wade said. I just kind of go into my matches and play my hardest. If I win, that's a bonus for me. If you don't, that's okay. Sun's going to come up tomorrow. I apologize for slaughtering the coach's name. Supreme Court case. Decision due on fair share fees. Lots at stake for unions in Janice versus AFSCME ruling. A Supreme Court case that began in Illinois could be decided as early as today and may deal a crippling blow to public sector unions. Governor Bruce Rauner launched the case, Janus versus AFSCME, shortly after he took office in 2015 by filing suit to challenge fair share agreements, where unions collect fees from non-members who work under a contract the union negotiated. Rauner argued that the fees are a violation of the First Amendment right to free speech because the union can use the money to contribute to political campaigns that workers may not agree with. Rauner was later found to have no standing to sue and was replaced as a petitioner by Mark Janus, a child support specialist at the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, who is covered by a contract negotiated by AFSCME Council 31, but doesn't think he should have to pay fair share fees, usually lower than regular union dues, because he isn't a union member. Critics of the suit say doing away with the fees poses a free rider issues. They argue that if the court sides with Janus, non-union members will be able to enjoy all the benefits and protections the union negotiated without having to pay for them. The states are split. 28 currently have right-to-work laws that do not allow fair share fees, while the 22 others, including Illinois, Pennsylvania, and New York, account for almost half of the total U.S. union membership. The issue spans decades, going back to the High Court's unanimous 1977 decision in Abood v. Detroit Board of Education that set the precedent for fair share fees. If justices side with Janus in this case, it would dismantle that framework, and something Maylee Smith at the University of Illinois Policy Institute said is essential for the future of conservative labor policy. This case is about fairness to government workers and First Amendment freedoms, says Smith, a staff attorney at the Institute. This is about restoring the people's choice of where they want their money to go. It shouldn't be seen as non-members' fault. Workers should be able to represent themselves. But Anders Lindahl, spokesman for AFSCME, which represents about 75,000 workers in Illinois, countered that the system currently in place is already fair to non-union workers. In a public sector workplace where members have voted to be represented by the union, the union is expected to represent everyone equally, he said. Everyone benefits from the contract, from the fair wage increases, the affordable health care, the fair procedure for solving disputes. Everyone benefits, so everyone should pay. There's no telling right now which way the court will rule. When a similar case filed in California reached the High Court in 2016, after the death of Justice Antonin Scalia had left it one member short, justices deadlocked 4-4, leaving the current system in place. This ruling will include the vote of Justice Neil Gorsuch, who was nominated by President Donald Trump and confirmed as Scalia's replacement. University of Illinois labor professor Robert Bruno, who recently conducted a study on the effects of the decision, said he found that it could represent the largest change to collective bargaining rights in the U.S. in decades, resulting in serious changes for the over 34% of public sector workers who are members of a union. Bruno, director of the Labor Education Program at the School of Labor and Employment Relations, argues that a ruling overturning the Abood decision would result in a reduction of wages for public sector workers, specifically for those in state and local government, an average decrease of 3.6%, or about $1,180 annually, and an estimated drop in total annual economic activity of between $11.7 billion and $33.4 billion. If you have fewer people paying dues or fees, that means you have less resources to do stuff like workplace representation, Bruno said. So you starve the union of resources, but you do nothing to reduce their burden. So the thought is that unions will have to cut staff, spend a lot less money, and still be compelled by law to cover everyone equally. He said that would celebrate the free rider issue and reduce the rate of union membership among state and local government employees nationwide by about 8.2 percentage points, leading to a loss of 726,000 union members. In Illinois, he said, that amounts to 49,000 union members leaving the ranks. Lindahl accused Rauner of trying to drain unions' resources and membership by filing the suit and issuing an executive order banning the fair share fees. That was later vacated by a St. Clair County judge and said the effort has thus far achieved the opposite effect, with about 2,000 non-members who were paying fair share fees asking to join. He said AFSCME has a system that sets non-member payments aside so that they aren't used to fund political advertising. Smith said the decision could only affect about 4% of all public sector workers in the country and wants more emphasis on the benefit to the worker and not the possible effects it could have on the union. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, June 21st, 2018. Please stay tuned for Part 2.